जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर ललिता विशाखा की जय। श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय। श्री गौर निताय की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। जय ओम विष्णुपाद। जय ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नम ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा। आई एम वेरी हैप्पी टू बी विथ ऑल ऑफ यू फ्रॉम ISKCON Baltimore, Maryland. It has been a while since I have been with all of you. So I was very happy when I received the invitation from Pradyumna Prabhu for a class. I do hope that all of you in Baltimore as well as from other places, wherever you are, that you are fine and safe. And I hope that your Krishna consciousness is also progressing well. So you might have been a little surprised to hear the topic for today, which is the genealogy of Lord Krishna. And you may be wondering, this is a rather unusual or even a strange topic. Actually, it is based entirely on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is an important topic for us to know also. Actually, some days ago, I had a class for another group of devotees elsewhere, and the topic there was the genealogy of Lord Sri Ramachandra and Sita Devi. So then naturally, I was thinking about having a class on the genealogy of Lord Krishna. So when it came turn for the Baltimore Temple lectures. I said, this is a good topic to have. So the word genealogy, as you know, means family tree in very simple language. So who was the father of Krishna, grandfather, great-grandfather, and so on, all the ancestors all the way up. And also to some degree it refers to those who came after him. But primarily we will focus on the forefathers of Krishna, who were his, or rather the forefathers of Krishna, that means the ancestors. So why is it important for us to know? The Srimad Bhagavatam, as we all know, we have been studying the Bhagavatam, it describes or it lists out the names of so many kings. From this king came this one, and he had so many sons, and this son had this, so many children, that son had so many children, and it goes on and on and on, page after page. And then sometimes for a particular king there may be a longer description, and so on. So devotees often ask the question as to why there is such a description of a family tree in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I discussed this at length in the previous class on the genealogy of Lord Ram, but since most of you were perhaps not there for that class, I'll just briefly mention the reasons why Shukadev Goswami has given such a list of descendants from Brahma all the way down to the beginning of Kali Yuga. So the first reason is that actually this is the nature of the Puranas. The Puranas talk on various subjects that include the creation, the sub-creation, the Manvantaras, what happened there. It talks about the incarnations of the Lord and all the pastimes that took place, and the creative impetus and how the universe was populated, how the act of creation took place. So in the course of all this, it is necessary to describe the different generations that have populated this universe. Right from the beginning of the universe, that is from Brahma, all the way down. And as Shukadev Goswami continues that, all the 10 topics that are supposed to be part of the Mahapurana, the Bhagavad Purana, are there. Atra sarga visargasya sthanam poshanam utayaha manvantareshanukatha nirodho muktir ashrayaha. So these are the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and indeed any of the major Puranas, the Mahapuranas. The relatively minor Puranas have at least 5 topics. So because these 10 topics are necessary to discuss in the Purana, so Shukadev Goswami mentions all of that, and it's all connected. And at different points, there are certain events that happen or certain personalities that are mentioned, and King Parikshit or the other personalities who are part of the dialogue, they ask as to what about, why did this happen, why did that happen? Then Shukadev Goswami or the speaker in that case, then he elaborates. So this is the reason, main reason why the list of descendants is given in such detail. Also, it is important to note that this proves that the Puranas are historical narrations. They are not simply mythological books or full of fictitious and imaginary tales of people from the bygone eras. They are actually historical events and historical personalities. Otherwise, what was the need to describe in detail, page after page, names of so many descendants, many of whom were not so noteworthy and not worthy of, you know, discussing in great detail? So what was the need to say all these names? So we can understand that these are actual events that happened. And of course, because these personalities and events have a role to play in the build-up to the appearance of the Supreme Lord in his various incarnations, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant exclusively for Bhagavata, it is connected to Bhagavan, therefore all these other topics that are discussed have also to be seen in connection with that. Therefore, the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam are all important and they are all ultimately connected to the Supreme Lord. And all these personalities, that the main personalities at least that we will discuss, have been very great exalted personalities. Most of them have been very pure devotees, or they've been associates of the Lord in some way. So it is important to discuss them. So this is a brief introduction about why the genealogy or the family tree of the Srimad Bhagavatam is so important. Especially I would urge you to look at Canto 9. Those of you who have Srimad Bhagavatam, after this class is over, not now, you need not do it now, you can see this like this. You have all the charts, the genealogical charts given at the end of Canto 9. So you can look at that and study it when you are studying Srimad Bhagavatam. You can try to follow the whole sequence and the chronology of how the Bhagavatam has been discussed. And it will all begin to make sense why a particular topic is discussed at a certain time and so on. A very detailed family tree. I remember many years ago there was a chart called the Family Tree of the Srimad Bhagavatam that was published in the Back to Godhead magazine many, many years back. And that is a summary in one chart of the entire family tree of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in discussing the genealogy of Lord Ram or of Lord Krishna, essentially, I have taken from the charts that are mentioned here in the ninth canto, I beg your pardon. So I have extracted the relevant portions of that, and we'll be discussing that. Okay, so I will start because I hope it doesn't stretch too long. So I would like to share a screen. Yes. Oh, I see. Okay, yes. Okay, so we'll begin our topic now. So we are going to talk of family trees. And the portion of the family tree that I want to start off with now is with the sons of Brahma and their lines. The lines means the line of descendants. So we'll begin with Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, the Vishnu who lies in the Garbhodaka ocean, and from his navel comes the lotus flower, and on the top of the lotus flower is Brahma, the creator. Then the Lord appears to Brahma and he guides him from within and from without about how to create the universe. So I'm not going before Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, because there's a lot before that, Mahavishnu, and then in the spiritual world there are so many lines, and ultimately there is Krishna in Vrindavan. So starting from Krishna in Vrindavan, we are going to come back to Krishna here and how Krishna appears here. But today we are going to talk about Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka as a royal person. The family tree of Krishna in Vrindavan, in Vraja, that I'll discuss in another lecture, because that is a lot of there are a lot of things to discuss there. Okay, so now from Brahma he had many sons. Okay, and Atri was one of them, Marichi was another, Swayambhuva Manu was another, and there were many others like Lord Shiva, Narada, the four Kumaras, and so on. So Brahma is the original father of the entire residence of this universe, actually. It is only from him that all the living entities of all the species originate. Okay? So now, we are going to focus not so much on Swayambhuva Manu's line and the other lines. The others, many of them are brahmacharis like Narada, the four Kumaras, and some like Lord Shiva are grihasthas. So the grihasthas had their own line, like there was Ganesh and Skanda born to Lord Shiva, etc. But let's briefly look at Swayambhuva Manu's line, because we're not going to be discussing that in detail. So Swayambhuva Manu had two sons called Priyavrata and Uttanapada. So from Priyavrata there were many descendants, that includes Rishabhdev, the great Rishabhdev. From Uttanapada there were many descendants, that includes great personalities like Dhruva Maharaj, Chakshusha Manu, Prithu Maharaj, Daksha Prajapati, and so on. So Swayambhuva Manu also had three daughters. So, and they were married off to different sages: Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti. So you've all heard these names. So some of them and their daughters and their children were married on this side, so we won't be talking about that. Then let's talk about Marichi, because this is also not the principal topic of our discussion today, but because it's necessary to have an overview, I'm mentioning it here. So from Marichi came Kashyap Muni. Kashyap Muni married many wives. One of them was Diti, and from Diti were born the Daityas, and particularly the kings Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Then from Hiranyakashipu was born Prahlad. But the word Daityas essentially means those who are Asuric in nature. Of course, Prahlad is an exception because he was born in a demoniac family, but he was a very, very great devotee. And so also later Bali Maharaj, his descendant. Then from Aditi, Kashyapa married Aditi, and her children, her sons, were called Adityas. They're called the Dvadasha Aditya, 12 Adityas, the demigods. And amongst them, one of the main Adityas is Vivaswan, the sun god. From sun god, the sun dynasty starts of Kshatriyas. Srila Prabhupada explains that there are essentially two Kshatriya lines that have populated the universe, one from the sun god and the other from the moon god. So from the sun god and that dynasty, Suryavanshi Kshatriyas, Lord Ram and Sita Devi both appeared there. So that I have already discussed in a previous class. But today's topic is going to be the line that we see right on the extreme left. So Atri. So Atri was a great sage. He was one of the Saptarishis, one of the seven sages. You see, in every day of Brahma, there are seven Manus. And in every Manu's period, which is called a Manvantara, the posts of the demigods and the seven sages changes. So that is usually the lifetime of the demigods, one Manvantara. Then those personalities have to depart, and other appropriate qualified personalities occupy the post of Indra, Chandra, and so on. So Atri was one of the Saptarishis. Now he's mentioned in the he lived for a very, very long time. His presence spans many yugas, and it also comes into Treta Yuga. So in Valmiki Ramayana we read about Lord Ram, Sita Devi, and Lakshman going into the forest in exile, and in Chitrakoot they met Atri Rishi and his wife Anasuya. We'll talk about her very briefly in the next slide. So from him comes Soma, the moon god. From moon god begins the second Kshatriya dynasty, the Somavanshi Kshatriyas or the Chandravanshi Kshatriyas. So it is in this dynasty of the moon that Krishna and the Pandavas have appeared. So just see the distinction. Lord Ram has appeared in the Suryavansha, the dynasty of the sun, and Krishna has appeared in the moon dynasty. So now, because the topic today is the genealogy of Krishna, So we'll essentially be speaking about the Moon Dynasty. The rest of the things I have said in this chart is just to give you a background. So now we'll go to the second chart, which speaks about Atri, Soma, and then their descendants. So now we'll come to the Moon Dynasty. So from Brahma came Atri. Remember, here was Atri. Atri, the son of Brahma. So we'll come back to Atri here. So Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, Brahma, Atri. Now he married Anasuya, who was a daughter of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. You remember I mentioned that Devahuti was one of the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. And in the Bhagavatam it is described how Swayambhuva Manu approached Kardama Muni and requested him to marry his daughter Devahuti. And from Devahuti and Kardama Muni were born many daughters and also one son. That son was Kapiladev. Okay? So Anusuya was one of those daughters of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Now she is known in the Vedic literatures as the paragon, as the perfect chaste wife, Pativratastri. So she was married to the great sage Atri. So the word Atri is very important because you will see surnames in India come from that Atri, Atreya. Even the word Dattatreya, Datta of Atri, you know, belongs to that. So Atri was a sage who was also, he had many, many descendants. So there was a pastime of Atri in the Bhagavatam that he did not have clear understanding of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead was. He was merely asked to perform penances by his father Brahma. So he started performing penances and he started praying to that one Supreme Lord. He didn't know exactly who that one Supreme Lord was. And he asked for a son like the Supreme Lord, you know. So anyway, he performed austerities for a long time. And then the Bhagavatam describes that Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, all three appeared in front of him. And he was surprised. He said, I called for the, Jagadishwar, the creator of the universe. So which one of you is that? You know, so I do not know. So in any case, they came there, they blessed him and they went away. And because he wanted a son or a child like the Lord, therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that he has a materialistic kind of bent to his austerities. Had he wanted Krishna as his son, then that would have been devotional. But he wanted someone like Krishna, someone like God. Okay, so in any case, so those Trimurtis, those three great personalities of the universe, they appeared in three forms. So Atri therefore had three sons. The first was Dattatreya, Datta, who was born of Atri, and he is a partial incarnation of Vishnu. Then there is Soma, who is a partial incarnation of Brahma. He is also the moon god, Soma or Chandra. And there was Durvasa Muni, the partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And we have all heard about Durvasa Muni in connection with Ambarish Maharaj and in connection with other pastimes as well. So, Soma, the moon god, is actually a very important personality in the Vedic history and Vedic culture as well. Apart from the fact that he is the ancestor of Krishna, and it is in his dynasty that Krishna appears, there are other reasons for which Chandra or Soma is important. First of all, he is one of the Navagrahas, one of the nine planets which astrologers speak about. And therefore, the Somavar, you know, is the is Monday, right? And even Monday, the word Monday is in the Western system refers to the moon. So the Indian system and the Western system, there are many similarities there. So he is in charge of Monday or Somavar. And Chandra or Som is the demigod who is in charge of the moon. And he has been empowered, and there is a long history in the Puranas to that. We don't have time to get into all that. But he was given the charge of the celestial objects along with plants and vegetation and also for the night. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna speaks about, how the taste of vegetables comes from the moon. So, that's an important point. And also during Sharad Purnima, you will remember that we leave the kheer out, the sweet rice that we make, we leave it on the terrace up so that they may soak in the rays of the moon and become delicious. Mm-hmm. So that is Soma. Now, he married 27 daughters of Daksha Prajapati. You remember I mentioned Daksha in the earlier thing as one of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu. So these 27 devis, or the they are actually the deities, predominating deities of the nakshatras. For those of you who are familiar with Vedic astrology or astronomy, you will know that there are constellations and there are also asterisms. Asterisms are basically groups of these celestial objects, like Kritika is one of them. So it has five or six objects there, then you have 27 such, and they're called nakshatras in Sanskrit. So it's an important time, and you will find references in all the Vedic scriptures, including Ramayana, Mahabharata, the Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, Krishna's appearance happened at the time when Rohini Nakshatra was on the ascendant, you see. So these nakshatras are mentioned. So he married the 27 daughters of Daksha, each of whom was a particular nakshatra, was the deity or the devi in charge of that nakshatra or that asterism. Now it so happened somehow that Chandra was more inclined towards Rohini, one of his wives, and he neglected the others. So naturally the others were unhappy and they complained to their father Daksha. So Daksha cursed them, cursed the moon god. He cursed Chandra. And he said that you will lose your power. And then Chandra was aghast and he begged forgiveness from Daksha. And he promised to rectify his conduct. Daksha could not completely undo the curse, but he somewhat modified it and said, okay, so you will partially lose your brightness and then sometimes you will have it. And after that incident, Srila Prabhupada also explains in the purport in the Bhagavatam there, that the moon has phases. So from the new moon, then it goes up to the full moon, it becomes brighter and brighter till full moon, and from full moon to the new moon, again it starts getting darker and darker, or less bright. So the phases of the moon have happened there. So anyway, the Soma, the partial incarnation of Brahma, is a very important personality. So there are many other things about Soma which are not so gratifying, but which are also there in all the Puranas. Anyway, he had a son who was called Buddha. Now, Buddha, this is not Buddha, not Gautama Buddha as in Buddhism. This is Buddha. Buddha is also very intelligent. So Brahma personally called him Buddha, which means a very intelligent one. And just as Soma is in charge of Monday, Somavar, so Buddha represents Mercury planet and he is in charge of Wednesday. So he actually is the first king of the Soma Vansha, of the Soma dynasty, the moon dynasty. But actually, it is from his son, Pururava, that the Moon dynasty is actually said to have begun, because Pururava is a much more celebrated king than Buddha. So Buddha married Ila, who is also Sudyumna. Again, these pastimes are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And from them, there was born the son, Pururava. So Pururava was a very powerful king, very celebrated in the Vedic scriptures. And it is from him, actually, people say that the Moon dynasty actually begins. Now, as he was a very powerful king, somehow or the other, he became attracted to Urvashi, who was a Apsara, a heavenly damsel. And Urvashi had also been cursed for some reason to become like a human being. So she came to earth, and then she had some conditions. Pururava, accepted those conditions, and they lived together for a long time, and then they had to separate because she had to go back to the heavenly planets. But nevertheless, she begot several sons for Pururava, about six sons. Now, it is said about Pururava that he was extremely attached to Urvashi. And this went on for a long time. And when Urvashi left, he was thoroughly heartbroken and distraught with grief. So he went and somehow he found her many years later. He begged her to come back and so on. So many things are described like this in the Bhagavatam and in some of the Puranas. And in trying to reach the higher planets of the universe, he started the first yajna for Karmakanda. Karmakanda is one of the sections of the Vedas where you follow certain modes of worship and so on to reach the higher planets. So because he was so attached to Urvashi and wanted to go to her planet from the earth planet, so he started, getting these Arani woods. There's certain types of wood called Arani, which is used in sacrificial fires. So he bought those, he rubbed them together and so on, and then the fire was lit. So the sacrificial fire is considered as the son of Pururava. That's what the scriptures say. And anyway, the time passed, and later he developed a deep sense of renunciation because he understood the frustration of material attachment in this world. So even though the description of Pururava comes primarily in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we also see that in the 11th canto, in the Uddhava Gita that Lord Krishna speaks to Uddhava, he also has one chapter, chapter 26, called Aila Gita, where King Ayala, another name of Pururava, spoke this Aila Gita, which is a song of renunciation, a song expressing the futility of trying to enjoy this world. So anyway, that was Pururava. So a very, very powerful king. So he had six sons. The middle four sons, they have their own place, but not important for us to discuss them here. I'll talk about this son Vijaya just briefly. After Vijaya came some descendants, and then there was a king called Gadhi. From Gadhi came Vishwamitra Muni, the celebrated Muni who is known for so many pastimes. He had many sons, and he had one daughter from the Apsara Menaka whose name was Shakuntala. And you've all heard the story of Shakuntala and Dushyanta. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Dushyanta has been referred to as Dushmanta. So sometimes Dushmanta, sometimes Dushyanta in different scriptures. So that is the famous Abhijna Shakuntala of Kalidas, the great poet. And anyway, Gadhi had a daughter, Satyavati, who was the mother of Jamadagni Rishi, and Jamadagni was the father of Parashuram. Jamadagni married Renuka Devi. So Parshuram, the Shakti Avesh avatar of the Lord, is a descendant of Pururava through Vijaya. So now we'll come to Ayu, because that is the more important line for us. So Ayo was also a powerful king. He acquired his power, according to the Puranas, by his austerities. So he performed many, many austerities, and he had many sons also. Amongst them, the eldest was called Yati. And Yati, being the eldest, was the heir to the throne. Nahush, I beg your pardon, we are on Nahush now. So Ayu had Nahush and other sons. Nahush was the most important of the sons of Ayu. Now, Nahush was very powerful. And one time it happened, there was a problem in the heavenly planets. What happened was that Indra had killed Vritrasura, who was actually from a Brahminical family. So he had to redeem himself from the sin of Brahmahatya, of killing a Brahmana. So he went to Manasarovar and hid within the stalk or the stem of a lotus there. So meanwhile, the heavenly planet, the seat of the king of the heaven, of heavenly planets, was empty. So temporarily, Nahusha from the earth was sent on deputation, so to speak, you know, to be the temporary king of the heavenly planets. So Nahush went there. Unfortunately, Nahush became very proud and he insulted the great sage Agastya Muni. And Agastya cursed him to become a python. So this is also mentioned in the Vedic scriptures. There is a brief mention in the Bhagavatam as well. And then Nahush had to come back. So Nahush had many sons. The eldest son of Nahush was called Yati. Now Yati was the heir to the throne, but he did not have interest in the world. So he renounced the world. And that is why actually sannyasi is called Yati. And then the next eldest son, Yayati, he became the king. So Yayati is also a very important king for us, because from him actually stem many dynasties. In the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada mentions in one purport that Yayati was the great emperor of the world and the original forefathers of all the great nations of the world, belonging to the Aryan and the Indo-European stock. And we'll see that as we go along to his descendants. So Yayati is actually the forefather of all the nations and all the Indo-Aryan and the Aryan stock in the world today. So that is why Srila Prabhupada used to say that if you want to really learn history of bygone ages, you have to read Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayana also as well. Because modern historians can speak about history only for the past few thousand years. And even then, there may be so many mistakes. But the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata, they speak about histories and personalities and events of very long bygone ages. And these are not mythological, as I mentioned in the beginning of the lecture. They are historical recordings. Originally, they were recorded by oral transmission, that is, by word of mouth only, and it was remembered by the disciples. But at the beginning of Kali Yuga, things were put into writing. So anyway, Yayati became very much involved in sense enjoyment. Now what happened is that he married Devyani, who was the daughter of Shukracharya, you know, the priest of the Asuras. Somehow or the other, even though it was an improper match, but it was sanctioned by Shukracharya, and it went ahead. And somehow or the other, then there was the king of Rishaparva, whose daughter was Sharmishtha, and she also came. So Yayati had offspring through both Devyani as well as Sharmishtha. So there was Yadu, there was Puru, and other sons as well. Now it so happened that because he also bore children through Sharmishtha, Devyani was very angry. So she went and complained to her father Shukracharya, and Shukracharya cursed him to lose his, cursed Yayati to lose his virility. So Yayati became very disturbed because he was very addicted to sense enjoyment, and now that his capacity to enjoy the senses was taken away from him, he was very sorry for it. And he went and begged forgiveness from Shukracharya. So Shukracharya said, "Okay, I can't take back the curse, but what I can do is that if somebody can exchange his youth for your old age, then you can continue to enjoy for many years, and then you can return your youth, that person's youth, back to him and take back your old age." So then that is what Yayati wanted to do. So he called his sons together and he said, just imagine, he said that, "So I want to enjoy this world and I don't want to become old. So you're all my sons. You're supposed to serve me. So which of you will now take my old age and give me your youth? And I wish to enjoy this world for many years. And after I'm fully satisfied enjoying this world, then I'll return your youth to you and take back my old age." So he asked Yadu, the oldest among them, and Yadu refused. So he was very angry. Yayati was angry with Yadu and said, "Then you will not become the king." So generally, the eldest one becomes the king. Now, behind the refusal of Yadu, the Acharya says the fact that Yadu understood that he was going to be the forefather of Krishna. So anyway, so then the other sons also refused. Puru was the youngest. So when Puru was asked, Puru said, "Yes, father, I agree to this proposal." And so Yayati was very pleased with him. Yayati enjoyed the youth he had borrowed from Puru for many, many years. And eventually, when the time came for him to renounce, he handed over the youth of Puru back to him, and then he renounced the world. Actually, Yayati also finally renounced, just like Pururava and others. So there was that training, there was that tradition, that culture, that whoever you may be, even if you're a powerful king who's enjoyed all sorts of pleasures, but a time comes when you will have to renounce. So Yayati did that and he made Puru the king. So Puru became the ancestor of the Pandavas, and Yadu became the ancestor of the of Lord Krishna. Now, you remember I mentioned just a few moments ago that Yayati is the forefather of all the nations of the world. Specifically there, Srila Prabhupada mentions that five dynasties originated from Yayati. One is the Yadu dynasty, which is also called the Yadava dynasty. So all those following in the line of King Yadu are called Yadavas, which is another name of Krishna. And those who follow the dynasty of Puru are called Pauravas. Now you may be wondering, is it Kauravas or Pauravas? It's Pauravas with a P. And Kuru is one of the descendants of Puru. So we'll come to that in the next one, next chart. And through the other three sons that he had, totally had five sons, through the other three sons, he started three other dynasties. One is the Yavana dynasty of the Turks. The other is the Mlecha dynasty of the Greeks, and the third was the Bhoja dynasty. So we see that the Greeks, the Turks, and all of these communities were spread everywhere are originally descendants from Yayati. And of course, during Parshuram's time, because the Kshatriyas misbehaved, so Parshuram chastised them and he drove them away. And out of fear of Parshuram, many of the kings left India and they went and settled all over the planet. So, what we'll do now is The next chart, we will discuss the ancestor of the Pandavas, Puru's dynasty. Now, the relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna is interesting, because from their father's side, they are related through this dynasty. The Pandavas are descendants of Puru, Krishna is a descendant of Yadu, and they are connected like this because Yadu and Puru are brothers. So from the father's side, they are related like this, which is quite a distant relation in one sense because many generations had passed. However, their relation becomes very close from their mother's side, and that we will see when we discuss the Yadu dynasty. So next, what we are going to do is we'll discuss the Puru dynasty in which the Pandavas appeared. Yes. So Puru's son, Puru had many descendants, and then later, after many generations, came Dushyanta. In the Bhagavatam, he is referred to as Dushmanta. So you all know of Dushmanta, or Dushyanta, and Shakuntala, who I mentioned earlier. So that was the reason I mentioned her name there also, as a daughter of Vishwamitra. So they had a son, Dushyanta and Shakuntala, who was Bharat. Now remember, this is not the Bharat who was the son of King Rishabhdev, and who in his next life or the life after next became Jad Bharat. So there are three famous Bharats in Vedic history, the most well known. One is the younger brother of Lord Ramachandra in the Sun dynasty. The second is the son of Rishabhdev, whom I mentioned earlier. And the third is this Bharat, who is the son of Dushyant and Shakuntala. So this Bharat was also a great king. Actually, it is said, there are differences of opinion. Some say that Bharat was named after the son of King Rishabhdev. Some people also say that it is named after the son of Dushyanta. In any case, Bharata was a great king, and he had many descendants. And then there was a generation in which there was a king called Rantidev. So you've all heard the story of Rantidev, who was very, very charitably disposed, and he had to feed so many people. There's no time to go into the details of each of these pastimes, but even at the cost of his own life, he fed, you know, so many of his guests. And he was tested by the demigods, and ultimately the demigods revealed themselves. So Rantideva is known as a very, very charitable person, a very pious person. So his son was Ajamidha. Ajamidha had several sons, and now we'll just talk about this one line with the son Nila. Nila had many descendants. Then after that, there was a son who was called Drupada. You have heard Drupad's names. So Drupada had many sons, and the chief amongst them was Drishtadyumna, who at one point for a period became the commander-in-chief of the Pandava army. And Drupada had a daughter whose name was Draupadi. So from Drupad comes Draupadi. This is the way of Sanskrit, the way it is, you know. So from this is very common in so many instances. So keep in mind, this is Draupadi here. Now let's come back to the other son, Riksha. So the son of Riksha was Kuru. Now Kuru was a great pious king. Therefore we have Kurukshetra, the place where King Kuru performed many, many sacrifices and religious ceremonies. So King Kuru is very famous because of that, being a very, very pious and devoted king. He was very brave, a very perfect king, a Raja Rishi. And it is after Kuru that descendants are called Kauravas. So we'll talk about it in a few moments. So after many descendants, there appeared Shantanu. Now, from Shantanu also before that, there are other kings, Prateep and so on, but we won't go into that. So Shantanu had, Bhishma from Ganga Devi. And then from Satyavati, he had Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. So then Bhishma, of course, didn't marry. Chitranga passed away. And Vichitravirya also passed away. So then through Vyasadev, and there was Pandu, Dhritarashtra, Vidura. These were born. Okay? So, you see, actually both the sons of Pandu, who are Yudhishthir, Bhima, Arjun, Nakul, Sahadev, and the sons of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan, and the 99 other sons and one daughter, they're all actually Kauravas. But generally when we speak, we make a distinction between Kauravas and Pandavas. That's just for the sake of making a distinction. So Pandu and Pandava, the sons of Pandu are called Pandavas. The descendants of Kuru are called Kauravas. So the Pandavas are also actually Kauravas in the sense that they are descendants of King Kuru. But in order to distinguish them from the sons of Dhritarashtra, the sons of Dhritarashtra are called Kauravas and sons of Pandu, Pandavas. Actually, in the Bhagavad Gita also, we will see that the Kauravas are referred to as Dhartarashtran, the sons of Dhritarashtra. Vidura, of course, didn't have any offspring. He was the third. So, you can see here that the Pandavas are descendants of Puru, whom I mentioned in the earlier chart. And then from Arjuna, of course, each of the Pandavas had two or three sons, as you can see in the chart. And one of the sons of Arjuna was Abhimanyu, the most famous amongst them. Abhimanyu's posthumous son was Parikshit. Parikshit was born after the death of Abhimanyu. When the battle of Kurukshetra started, Abhimanyu's wife Uttara was pregnant with Parikshit. And Parikshit is that famous personality to whom Shukadev Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he had many sons. The chief amongst them was Janamejaya, to whom the Mahabharata was spoken. And then there were 26 generations after that. And then the Soma dynasty or the moon dynasty ends as per the Srimad Bhagavatam. Similarly, at some point in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the sun dynasty also ends. So now we have discussed the dynasty of Puru. Right? You remember here? Puru. Now we'll go to Yadu. We will go back here now. Okay, so the dynasty of Yadu. So Yadu was a very famous king. He is glorified, he is highly fortunate. It is because Krishna appeared in his dynasty, and because of Krishna, Krishna is well known as Yadava, so Yadu's name has also become glorified because of his connection to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada explains that generally an object is seen with reference to its origin. So if sandalwood comes from the Malaya mountain, then that sandalwood is called Malaya Chandan. Yeah. So somebody is a descendant of a famous family, like a wealthy family or something, then that person becomes famous because of his dynasty. But for Yadu, it is the other way around. Yadu has become even more famous because Krishna appeared in his dynasty. So Yadu had many sons. Kroshta was one of them. Then there were many descendants. And then there was a king called Satvata. So now we will find in the Srimad Bhagavatam many occasions when words like Satvata, Vrishni, Andhaka, Bhoja, all these have been used on numerous occasions. So the king Satvata had many sons. So among them, Vrishni, Andhaka and Mahabhoja. So we'll talk about Mahabhoja. Mahabhoja, his descendants were called the Bhoja dynasty. Andhaka had many descendants, and then there was Ahuka. Ahuka had two sons, Ugrasen and Devaka. Devaka's daughter was Devaki. He had six other daughters and four sons. And Ahuka's other son, Ugrasen, had Kamsa as his son, eight other sons and five daughters. So you see, when we say that Kamsa was the brother of Devaki, they were cousins actually, first cousins. But in the Vedic culture, you see, cousins are also like brothers and sisters, you know. So in the English language, there is a distinction between brother and cousin and so on. So that's why Kamsa was riding the chariot of Devaki after her wedding. So because Kamsa was the most powerful among the kings, so he took Devaki out of it, the fondness for his sister. And that is when the Akashvani happened and all that. So King Ugrasena is called on many occasions the king of the Andhakas, the Bhojas and the Vrishnis. And sometimes Krishna is also referred to like that. So Ugrasen, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many pastimes about Krishna and Ugrasen. So these things may sometimes be used interchangeably. The Vrishni dynasty, the Andhaka dynasty, Bhoja dynasty, and the Satvata dynasty, like that. In fact, even Krishna is referred to as the king of the Vrishni, Bhoja and Andhaka dynasties. When Sudama Vipra's wife urges him to go to see Krishna in Dwarka, she says that Krishna is the king of these dynasties and he will definitely fulfill your desires and give you some riches to maintain your Grihastha ashram. So, this is the descendants of the Andhaka and Bhoja dynasties. Now we'll come to Vrishni. Now just as from Yadu comes Yadava, from Vrishni comes Varshneya. So that's Krishna, or the descendants are also called Varshneya sometimes. So from Vrishni came many descendants. Then there was Shursena. Shursena had Vasudev, nine other sons and five daughters, amongst whom Kunti was the chief, the most well known. So therefore we see that Vasudev and Kunti were siblings. Both were children of Shursena. So therefore Vasudev's sons, children rather, Balaram, Subhadra and Krishna and other sons, they were cousins, first cousins of the Pandavas. Karna also was a son of Kunti, of course. That's a secret matter that came out only later. But Kunti, through her marriage to Pandu, then had the Pandavas. So in this way, the relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna and Balaram is much closer. Through the father, it is, as we mentioned earlier, through the Puru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty. But through their mother, it's a very close connection. So in that way we can understand that Kunti was the maternal aunt, or rather paternal aunt, of Krishna and Balaram. Paternal aunt means the sister of their father, Vasudev. And therefore Krishna is also called Vasudev. Vasudev and Vasudev. And therefore the Pandavas are also called Kaunteya. Now, it's not only Arjuna. We think of Arjuna as Kaunteya because that's what we see in the Bhagavad Gita. But strictly speaking, from a grammatical point of view, any of the sons of Kunti can be called Kaunteya. So, in this way, we see Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra. It's an interesting thing also that the Harivansha and the Mahabharata mentioned that Subhadra is a daughter of Vasudev, but not through Devaki, through Rohini Devi. Now, she came much later. So she was much younger to Krishna and Balaram. Balaram was originally in the womb of Devaki, but he was transferred to the womb of Rohini. So he is considered son of Rohini, but he could be also considered son of Devaki because originally he was there. So Krishna is the son of Devaki, yes, but actually he is also the son of Mother Yashoda. That's another topic we are going to see in another lecture that I will do on the family tree of Krishna in Vraja. Now we are only seeing the Kshatriya family tree of Krishna. So, Vasudev through Rohini Devi had a daughter, Subhadra, who is also, in Srila Prabhupada's words, Yoga Maya potency. She's also like a Bhakti Shakti potency, and she appears along with her two brothers in Jagannath Puri on the altar. And in the Rath Yatra, she is very much present. She has a cart all to herself. So she is another very important personality. So this is how we see Krishna's appearance in Mathura. And then of course he moved on to Dwarka. But when it comes to Krishna in Vrindavan, he was not a Kshatriya there. He was a Vaishya. So we will speak about that in another lecture. So this is the family tree of Krishna. And further down from Krishna, his descendants, you know, he had 16,108 queens. And with each of them, he had 10 sons. And each of those 10 sons had another 10 sons. And then the family of Krishna and Balaram was huge. In Dwarka, millions and millions of descendants of Krishna. Subhadra, of course, was married to Arjuna. That pastime appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is more or less in brief the family tree or the genealogy of Krishna. So finally we have come to our topic, which is the appearance of Krishna. How did Krishna appear? So that original Krishna has now eventually come back here. He appears very kindly as the son of his devotees to facilitate his various pastimes. Okay, so we'll stop here. So, sorry, I've gone a little over time. Exactly 1 hour though. Okay.
No, Maharaj, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Maharaj, is very nice. This is many things we don't know. But actually we know the Yayati, King Yayati is the main, from him all this dynasty started, which you have mentioned earlier.
Yes,
so
yes.
It's very nice, Maharaj, to learn everything and really enjoy this. And I hope in the next time we, like you said, in detail we learn about the Vrindavan and Krishna's pastime over there. What the coming, you know, dynasty wise.
Yes, that I'll be doing for another group of devotees at the next lecture that I have.
Right, Maharaj. So, that is nice. Maharaj, can I request you if somebody have a question?
Yes,
for
yes.
Sure. Dear devotees, who has a question, please raise your hand and Vivek Prabhu can unmute you and you can ask the question to the Maharaj. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Was it too heavy, too much of a heavy dose for all of you, all those family trees and all the networks and the descendants? But because it's connected to Krishna, so it is transcendental. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for a very nice lecture. I have one big question, Maharaj. You mentioned that Atri Mahamuni, when he prayed for the Supreme Lord, because he doesn't know who is it. Mema Maharaj, like, you know, is there any significance why the three personalities came when he prayed for one Supreme Lord?
Because he himself was not clear about who he wanted. So Jagadishwar, so Vishnu is Jagadishwar in one point of view because he is a maintainer and sustainer of the universe. Brahma is Jagadishwar because he is the creator. And Shiva is Jagadishwar because he is the destroyer. So all of them are Jagadishwar. So it was not clear who he was referring to. Atri was not very clear in his conception of who Jagadishwar was. But nevertheless, very kindly, all three of them appeared before him. Okay, any other question?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, one question here is, can you tell us about Subhadra Mata and when we should celebrate her birthday? I was thinking of doing a class on one of the Sundays here on Subhadra Devi. Because we talk of Balaram, we talk of Krishna, but very little is known about Subhadra Devi. So I'll be doing an entire class on her at some point. That will be, I think, in Hindi though. But as far as her birthday is concerned, I'm not sure, but I'm sure in Puri they are very clear, they are very particular about this. Balaram's birthday, Krishna's birthday, that we know. But this much is clear, that she is a daughter of Rohini and Vasudev, and she is the younger sister of Krishna and Balaram, and she is Yogamaya potency and also the Bhakti potency. Any other questions? I hope your center and temple is going on nicely.
Yes,
all the activities, the temple is fully constructed and everything is settled.
Yes, Maharaj, everything is settled and all the programs are coming going on nicely. We have Baltimore has a Rath Yatra is coming on July 24th.
Okay, okay.
Right, so this is our 18 years Rath Yatra in Baltimore, Inner Harbor. We are doing this Rath Yatra. And every year doing, but last 2 years we don't have Rath Yatra because of Corona crisis.
Okay, okay.
So now we have Snan Yatra is coming in July 10th. So all the month of July is very busy for us. All devotees over there working hard for the Rath Yatra, Maharaj. Very nice.
Wonderful, wonderful. Very
yes,
nice.
Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Yeah, somebody has a question here, I think.
Everybody unmute.
Maharaj,
Vivek.
Maharaj, I have
a question. Yes, yes. Vivek, this
Krishna, Maharaj, yeah. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for detail explaining the.
Yeah, come on the video so
can you hear me, Mataji, Maharaj?
Yeah, you come on the video so we can see who's asking the question.
Yeah. All right. Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Yes.
So, Maharaj, the question I have is, so you mentioned about Lord Krishna appearing through the center family tree. Two questions I have is, Maharaj, in Bhagavatam it states that Lord Krishna, the fourth canto, that he appears along with Arjuna from Lord Naranarayan Rishi, right? So how is that connected in this tree? And also the second question, follow-up question is, why all this arrangement, such a detailed arrangement for Lord Krishna to appear? Of course, he is the Supreme Lord, he can do it, but is there a specific reason as to why the Supreme Lord does have this kind of a detailed arrangement?
Yeah, were you there in the beginning of the lecture?
I missed.
Yeah, so maybe you can hear that later. So I answered that question about why the genealogy is important and why in Srimad Bhagavatam so many pages and after pages are devoted to the list of descendants generation after generation. So I have mentioned that in the very beginning of the class today.
Okay.
And regarding your second question, what was it as to why this Narayan Rishi? Well, you see, that is a different appearance. The Lord appears in different incarnations. So now we are talking of his current appearance 5,000 years ago in Mathura and Dwarka. So the genealogy is with respect to that. With respect to his other avatars, that is, when he appears in human society, then that is separately dealt with. Like Lord Ram, he is part of the Suryavansha, the solar dynasty, right? So the different, whenever the Lord appears in the human species, of course he always remains the Supreme Lord, but when he appears in the human species, he generally appears as a Kshatriya, not always. Like in Kapila Dev's case, for example, he was not a Kshatriya, but he may sometimes often appears in the Kshatriya dynasties, and then he has to link up with some line because he has to he appears just like any other human. So therefore he appears as somebody's son, and that person is somebody's son, and so there's a whole genealogy that goes with that.
So Maharaj, so you're saying Lord Krishna appearing via Sri Narayan Rishi is different. It's not connected with this genealogy.
Yes, Naranara and Rishis also is part of this genealogy. I did not mention him here. He is also part of the tree, and he will be there. But we have to remember that this is happening cycle after cycle, yuga, age after age. It's not just a one-time thing. In every day of Brahma, the Lord is appearing in so many different forms. And each time he will come as Naranarayan, each time he will come as this. So actually, Naranarayan and Rishi themselves, they are Nara is Arjuna, Narayan is Krishna. Originally, Krishna is the supreme. Narayan comes from Krishna, and then some. Therefore, it is mentioned that Naranarayan Rishi are Arjuna and Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. So now the question here is: since she is Yog Maya, wouldn't her birthday be Janmashtami as well? I'm just curious, since I have been worshipping her. Well, that is why I said that I will have to give a separate lecture for this, because even though she's, see, we can talk of Subhadra Devi as Yogamaya, as Mahamaya, and also as Bhakti Shakti, and all three are mentioned. So when Srila Prabhupada refers to her as Yogamaya Shakti, that is right. But when you look at the 10th canto, I think it's the second chapter also, when Krishna calls Yogamaya, and then he tells her, "You perform this function, you take my plenary portion to the womb of Devaki to Rohini, and then you will be worshipped as Ambika Chandi," and then she goes on to the Vindhya Hills. So there she's talked about as Mahamaya. So there, in that role, she is Mahamaya. So Subhadra and Bhadra, one of her names is Bhadra. So Prabhupada distinguishes between Bhadra and Subhadra in the sense that Subhadra refers to the Yogamaya potency, Bhadra refers to the Mahamaya potency, like that. So from one sense, from Krishna's point of view, there is no distinction between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. But nevertheless, the different personalities play those functions. So Subhadra as Yogamaya, no, she is not, you can say that, but she was also born along with Krishna to Mother Yashoda. And then she was transferred here, but then she left. So you can say that as Yogamaya she was, that is her birthday. But when she was born to Mother Rohini, that was much later. So they are different dates. All right, any other final question? Okay. Fine. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Thank
okay.
you, Maharaj. Really, we enjoy the class.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.
Hari Hari Bol.
ISKCON Baltimore Yatra ki jai.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.